Hello and welcome to another episode of Everything is Canon, a CineLinks podcast, a podcast where we discuss the latest books and novels with the people who wrote them. I'm your host, Steve Duncan. However you may have found your way here, thanks so much for tuning in. If you like that intro music, then you've got great taste. That's Sam Witwer and the Crash Tones. If you want to hear more of the Crash Tones, you can download their latest album, Revenge of the Crash Tones, on iTunes or visit samwitwer.com. Today on the show, we've got Jessica Salafio Ward from laughingplace.com joining me as my co-host as we talk to Mary Mancusi all about her great new book, Frozen 2 Dangerous Secrets. Frozen fans will love this expanded version of the world they already know so well. It follows the exploits of a young Iduna and Egnar as they and Arendelle are on the cusp of great change. Dangerous Secrets falls right into place, embracing what we've come to know about this franchise, while at the same time infuses the story with a new sense of vibrance and intrigue. We discuss just about everything under the sun, including how to make a predictable story intriguing, what sweet frozen Easter eggs can be found, and what ingredients go into making a great romance book. Warning, this is a spoiler discussion, so if you haven't read the book and don't wish to be spoiled, better stop listening now, but definitely double back once you've had a chance to read the book.
Hi everyone, welcome to the show. I'm going to ask that you bear with us a little bit today, because we're going to be talking about a mostly unknown bit of intellectual property. The hope is, though, that by the end of the show, we've piqued your curiosity enough that maybe you'll want to check it out. Before I get to that, though, there's a couple of introductions that I would like to make. My wonderful co-host today is Jess. She is from The Laughing Place. You've probably read her work there, and she's a fellow CineLinkser as well. Probably most importantly for today, she is a Disney expert, much like our guest as well. And she's also joining us from the great state of Louisiana. Hi, Jess.
Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in today.
Thanks for joining us today. This is super cool. I don't usually have a co-host, but when I thought about scheduling this one, I was like, there's nobody better. So thank you very much.
Wonderful.
But Jess is joining me today because we're going to be talking to someone really cool. Mary Mancusi is a former, I don't like the way they worded that. We're going to talk about that. Mary Mancusi is a former Emmy award-winning TV producer and author of more than two dozen sci-fi fantasy books for kids, teens, and adults. Her best-selling series have been chosen as featured selections in the Scholastic Book Fairs and clubs and have been selected by the American Library Association as quick picks for reluctant readers and popular paperbacks, which is very cool. In addition to writing, she's an avid cosplayer, horror aficionado, which is super cool since we're so close to that time of year, and a MMORPG gamer. Welcome to the show, Mary.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
We're very happy that you're here. Former Emmy Award winning makes it sound like they've taken it from you or something.
Yeah, weird? You're right. All I mean is I don't do TV news anymore.
No, I know.
Yeah. Officially. But yes, my Emmys are still intact and still hanging out in my loft.
Yeah, yeah. No, No, I get what they meant, but it just read weird, right?
You know, you're right. You're totally right.
Did something happen? Did something, what did she do? Yeah.
Something did happen to them. I had a house fire and they burned down, and luckily the Academy sent new ones. So they're not the original. So there you go.
There it is.
That's awful. That's awful to hear. I hope everyone was safe and sound during it.
Yeah. No one was at the house at the time, thankfully. So okay. It was quite a while ago now.
You're in Texas, yeah?
I am, Austin.
Okay, so you're not part of the, I thought, for a second there, my heart stopped. I thought it was maybe part of the California wildfires or something. Or
No, this was just a freak lightning accident many years ago in Massachusetts when I lived up there.
Okay, and I probably scared Jess half to death. She's from Australia, so they unfortunately know all too well about wildfires, eh, Jess?
Yeah, we do, yeah. Thankfully, yeah, none affected on my end either, but yeah. Definitely hot goes out to all those who are in struggle town.
Absolutely. And also, before we move on, I almost thought about not doing this interview because Mary likes pineapple on her pizza.
I'm sad with you.
I know, sacrilege.
just jokes.
It's one of those things like candy corn or Peeps or pineapple on pizza. You know, you either love it or hate it.
Yeah, I know. So It's so dumb how we react to things like that too, like, because I love pizza and I love pineapple. So it's like, why wouldn't I want, I don't know. Anyways, just silliness. But all kidding aside, we are here to talk about Mary's upcoming book, Frozen 2 Dangerous Secrets, that comes out in about a month. Yesterday would have been better timing, but today is just as well because yesterday was Frozen Fan Fest. So happy Frozen Fan Fest, everyone. Did you, I know you dropped a sort of like a couple of excerpts for the book for part of that event. Were you physically part of it? Not physically, virtually part of it in any way?
No, I think they were really catering to the younger audience.
Yeah, I know.
And this is a teen book, which I think surprises some people. It's not, you know, I read it to my 9-year-old and she was fine with it, but, and there's not like, it's Disney, so it's not like you're going to have objectionable content, but, right. You know, the story is older and I think is more geared to the older elementary or teen or even adult, really. I think adults will really like this one.
Jess, did you catch any of that coverage yesterday at all, or?
I didn't actually. No, I had missed out yesterday, but no, like I'm super excited to hear about everything that came out of that event.
I looked up a couple things on YouTube today, and it was a lot of product things and stuff like that. So, but I definitely agree to Mary's point. A lot of young children stuff happening for sure. Definitely geared towards them, but looked like a lot of fun either way. And considering I didn't even know it existed, was that the first one yesterday, Mary?
I think they had it before, but it was a non-virtual event, but I could be
right.
wrong.
Okay.
This is definitely the first virtual.
How are you doing with virtual events and stuff this year? How's your year been?
Well, I mean, we've been doing the best we can, like everyone else. Certainly, I hate virtual versus real life. I just miss being out there and seeing readers and hanging out. I do a lot of school visits normally, and just being in a classroom with excited readers is just, it brings so much energy to our jobs as writers. And, you know, Dragon Con, of course, was virtual this year, and that was that's my biggest event of the year. I just love Dragon Con in Atlanta. We go every year, we cosplay, I do a billion panels. And so to miss that energy and excitement, you know, is a bummer for sure. So I'm hoping that we can get on the other side of this soon and we can see each other again.
Yeah, my favorite con just passed or would have passed, New York. That's my favorite convention each year. And it's just, it's, you know, just one of many, same as you, have been to Dragon Con before. And, oh God, it's so depressing. But,
speaking of cons, sorry, Steve, I'm back here just cause I wanted to follow up with Mary. I noticed that you're a World of Warcraft fan. And I was wondering if you had ever previously like cosplayed or just attended, BlizzCon.
I did attend BlizzCon. I think it was their first one. It was quite a few years ago now, and it was so much fun, and we had been talking about going back this year, actually. Of course, that didn't happen, but I'm dying to get back to it. I think I love it. I've been a WoW fan since it came out, to the point where I used to play so much that I probably wouldn't have books on the shelves right now. I'd still be in a raid. I was quite obsessed with it before I had a daughter, and I had to scale back a lot, but we still play and we're really excited about Shadowlands coming out, and so we're kind of prepping for that.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, our household is pretty similar. My husband is the big WoW fan, but since he was into the games, I've read a bit about the lore and stuff, and it's just it's a whole new world.
I highly recommend you read Christy Golden's books. She writes for the WoW franchise, and she's just amazing. Like, I love her. It just adds a whole new dimension to the games.
Oh, that's awesome! Thank you. I'm writing her name down right now.
Yeah, there's a really great publishing side to World of Warcraft that I love because I don't play the game myself, but I've read a few of the books and. I mean, that's what the game is. It's a story, right? It's essentially a story that you're playing. So, of course, it makes sense that it, you know, translates so easily to the page, right? But to Mary's point, there is some great, great stuff on the publishing side for Warcraft.
And it's interesting. I was at Dragon Con last year, and we attended the Loremaster panel that WoW was doing. Sort of ties into this. Is like they have a whole person who is just like, I don't know how he does it. His brain must be just this computer. And he keeps track of everything. And so when they have, you know, IP projects or whatever, the writers can go to him and be like, how come blah, blah, blah. And he just can explain it. And I think it was so impressive to just listen to him talk and how they all like organize around that.
One of the things that you do, Mary, which I think is fantastic and would have certainly been affected by everything that's happened this year, is your work with children and students, you know, the Camelot in the classroom, all the visits you do and the Once and Future Writers Club and these things. How has that been this year for that? Does it translate to online as well as you'd like it to? How has that been going?
I don't think it does. I think you have to be there in person to really impress the kids. I mean, they're used to seeing celebrities online, so it's not that thrilling to be like, oh, you know, here's a video of someone that wrote a book. You know, they want to see that personal face-to-face. So it's just not the same. I did put on my school visit for free on YouTube for teachers if they wanted to use it back in the spring so that they could have this outlet, you know, if they wanted to play it for the kids, you know, because I know the teachers are struggling a lot, obviously. And so I wanted to give that to them. But yeah, it's not the same as being in there with them, answering their questions, you know, getting them too riled up a little bit and, you know, all that good stuff.
How did that start for you? Was that sort of like a love of the thing, or was it data mining, or how did that get going for you?
You mean school visits in general?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good extension as an author to get your books out there. Obviously, in these days, you know, Barnes & Noble will keep a couple copies of your book on the shelf, or, you know, you can download, you know, you can get it on Amazon or whatever. But really getting face-to-face interaction with your core readers, especially with middle grade. I used to do it a little bit when I did more teen books. But it's not the same going into a high school, because they'll like sit there yawning and like pretend not to care. Then afterwards you'll get them on Instagram being like, oh my gosh, that was so cool. But like, were you even paying attention? I can't tell, you know, so it doesn't have the same thing as like going into middle school or elementary school and just seeing the enthusiasm and them just being so hungry for books and stuff like that. So, but yeah, I know I really enjoy it. I think it helps me be a better writer too, because you can actually see the kids that you're writing to and listen to them and see what they're into. And just the enthusiasm carries on when you're home sitting in front of a computer all by yourself. You know, you can remember that energy and excitement.
It's interesting. It's an interesting audience, because they're not consumers, like in the sense that they don't buy these books themselves, right? They're too young or don't have any money or whatever. So it's, you know, it's actually to me, it would seem like a more difficult position to, because you're convincing someone to convince someone else to buy your books, right?
Some are very convincing to their parents, though.
Right.
But it is interesting, because when I transferred from doing adult books and teen books, I was suddenly no longer, especially online, marketing to my end reader. And so you have to reach out to like teachers, librarians, you know, like the gatekeepers, parents, more than you're not talking to your end reader. And that was kind of a weird adjustment for me. I actually prefer sometimes to do teen books, just because I get to actually interact with people online that are the readers instead of the gatekeepers. So I don't know.
One of the things I know Jess loves to do too is cosplay, and you guys both have such a love of Disney. One of you guys, Jess, do you stray I know you like, you know, sort of like macabre, sort of you're Louisiana seems like a perfect state for you. It seems like you sort of really love the history of that area.
I mean, cosplay, the sky's the limit. And I'm pretty useless when it comes to making my own costumes and things. I'm definitely a, you know, revamp either old costumes or just, you know, stray fabrics that I have lying about the house. But I would be very interested to know, Mary, if you like build, like have your own workshop in terms of building cosplays, or is it just kind of you, do you hire someone? How does that operate in your world?
I would say I do a little bit of everything. So certainly every year I will make a costume. I'm not a seamstress, but my husband is. Well, he's not a seamstress either. But he can sew. And my mother-in-law is an amazing, amazing seamstress. So sometimes I'll design the costume and then they will actually put in the sweat labor into it. And but if it's making armor or stuff like that, I can do that. Making like props, like staffs or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And but a lot of cosplay is also just collecting things, you know, collecting pieces of things and putting them together in an interesting way. I don't necessarily gravitate to screen accurate costumes. Sometimes I'll do that, but I really prefer the mashups. I prefer to have something fun and clever that people will be like, wait a second, you know, I know that. Those are always my favorite every year. So like, I'll give you an example since we're talking Frozen today. My friend and I did a Frozen Star Wars mashup where I was Rey Elsa with Bibi Olaf.
Oh my God.
And she was Hanna Solo with Kylo Sven. So those were probably our most famous costumes. So, you know, just having fun with that really gets people's attention, and you can just be completely creative.
Oh, that sounds so fun. I definitely am going to go and dig up those photos if they exist anywhere.
Oh, yeah, they do. They're all over the place online.
That's great. Yeah, speaking of like cosplay and doing things a little bit differently, what do you think of like Disney bounding and things? Because I think that's just a wonderful... I recently read... the book on Disney bounding by the fabulously creative founder Leslie Kay, and she, you know, was just saying how great it is to make costuming so accessible and also, you know, play it down a little bit so you can just wear it casually. So what are your thoughts on bounding?
I love it. I think it's awesome. And I love going to the parks and seeing people and being like, I bet she's, you know, and you kind of have to figure it out sometimes because they are subtle. Right. And it's great because in the parks, you can't, you know, unless you're a little girl or a little boy, you can't just go in a full on ball gown into the parks. They sadly don't approve of that, which I understand why. You don't want to confuse the kids. But, you know, and except if it's Halloween. So Disney Bound is a great way to express yourself and show your favorite characters off. In a different kind of way.
That, and it's just so comfortable.
Yeah, much more comfortable than a ball gown and a corset and all that.
I was gonna say, I'm a huge lover of corsets and, you know, an avid follower of Helena Bonham Carter-esque style, but when it comes to comfort, give me you know, a red t-shirt and I'm suddenly Winnie the Pooh. It's awesome.
I did at Disney Ursula costume a couple years ago, and it was huge. I mean, it might as well have been a ball gown. Like the tentacles were stuffed, and then I had a corset on, and so I was in the line for Space Mountain, and I'm like, oh, wait a second, I don't know if I can fit in the car because I'm like all stuffed out, you know, to here, and I'm trying to like stuff my tentacles into the little car, and the people in line were like all into it. They're like, go Ursula, you can do it. It was so much fun, but certainly not practical.
I know Jess has done it a little bit lately. Mary, have you done any just at home for fun cosplaying just to do it, or?
Yeah, we have. Yeah. My family and I, luckily, they're into it too. So we'll have like a theme weekend. We'll pick whatever the theme is, Pirate Weekend or, you know, like whatever. Yeah. And then we'll dress up and we'll take pictures and put them online and we'll have themed food and all that. So, you know, we try to make it fun.
You've got, you know, like we talked about, you've released several books already, and I'm just, you know, 2020 has been such a crazy year to release a book. You know, how are you doing with that emotionally, and just because it's challenging in a lot of ways that isn't normally challenging, not just as a marketing standpoint, but just as the emotional toll it's taking on all of our personal lives as well, right? Because there's so much, you know, there's fire right out front of our front door, literally in some cases. So what is there any sort of like, I've talked to a couple of authors who sort of like felt kind of bad or guilty about releasing something this year and having to promote, you know, in whatever limited ways they could to promote a book in spite of sort of, you know, there's a lot of just sort of negativity going on right now.
Yeah, I mean, I get that feeling. I understand where they're coming from. But at the same time, I think it's more important than ever that we, you know, show stories and give people stuff to read and give people stuff to take their mind off every day. You don't have to doom scroll every second of the day. In fact, it's the best times I have are when I step away from the computer sometimes and I spend a few minutes reading a book or not thinking about everything that's going on. It's okay not to focus on it every second. You do need to have some self-care and sanity and all that. And I think in the spring, I was very anxious about everything, especially that was going on, you know, before you start getting used to it a little bit. And I think books were something, you know, I would go out in a hammock on my backyard and like just read. And for a few moments, I would have some kind of sense of peace. So I don't think authors should feel guilty about promoting their books and getting them out there. But at the same time, I do think it's a lot more difficult. You're not having that drive by traffic or walk, you know, through traffic as much, especially in the spring. I had a book come out in May called Dragon Ops, and it's one of my favorite books that I ever wrote. It's so fun. It's like a video game come to life. And yet it barely made a blip because no one was going to stores. They were all closed back then. You know, it's a middle grade book, so it's not like they're on Amazon, you know, looking for books. And so it was so disappointing, and there's going to be a sequel out next year. And I'm like, why even bother? You know, It's like no one saw the first book. Obviously, it'll be released in paperback, and maybe that will end up, you know, working out, whatever. But I'm not as concerned with Frozen because it's such a known entity. You know, I think that it will find its audience, and I think it's an older audience anyway. So they're going to be online. It's got a built-in fandom, and things are more open now. So you are going to go into Target and see it, most likely. So, but yeah, Dragon Ops was such a bummer. I was so sad about that book and that it didn't have the life it deserved.
I'm sorry, Mary. I hope it's one of those things that, you know, you're saying, oh, what, you know, what's the point in a sequel? But I hope it's one of those things that, you know, the sequel will be boosted next year because people are just suddenly like, you know, well, hopefully our, you know, the plan is that we will resume normal life in some way, shape or form, provided that it's safe to do so. But, you know, I would hope they'd be like, oh, a sequel. Oh, that means there must be the first one. Let's go back and get the first one. And it'll get this kind of delayed bump that it should have otherwise got this year.
That would be great. And I do think middle grade has a long shelf life because it ends up in schools and libraries and stuff like that. So, you know, it may find its audience eventually. So we'll keep our fingers crossed for that.
Fingers crossed for a gigantic do-over next year where everything, we get to redo everything.
Except for Dangerous Secrets.
You just killed my transition. Speaking of Dangerous Secrets, that's why we're here. That's what we're here to talk about. But I just wanted to make sure we discuss sort of issues that are relevant to all of us today. And my apologies, Mary. I usually like to start off with, I hope you're safe and you and your family have been safe through this pandemic and going forward. I know I'm in Canada, so we just don't have nearly the same numbers that you folks do in the U.S. But I don't take it for granted, and I have so many friends in the States. So just extending that to you and your family. Hope that everybody's safe.
We appreciate that, and we are all safe, and we're lucky we live in Austin, Texas, because the numbers here are much better than other places in Texas and other places in the country. So we're I think everyone in our city is being safe as they can and wearing masks and taking precautions. And so I'm really proud of our city and how well we've done in the face of this.
Well, that's because Austin is a blue island in a sea of red, right?
I wouldn't say it.
That's okay. That's all right. No politics. I keep reminding myself. Anyways, Frozen 2 Dangerous Secrets. Bear with me for a second, guys. I'm actually going to read the synopsis, so just give me a second. 16-year-old Iduna harbors a dark secret. On the surface, she's an Arendellian village girl, an aspiring inventor, and the best friend of Prince Agnar, but she's also secretly Northuldra. Ever since the day the forest fell, Arendellians have despised and distrusted Northuldra with a vengeance. No matter that Northuldra, along with some of Arendelle's own, have been trapped in the enchanted forest behind an impenetrable wall of mist since the day of the battle. Iduna doesn't know why the mist refuses to part or why it descended to begin with. The only clear thing is that she must keep her identity from everyone, even Agnar. Her life depends on it. Fortunately for her, Agnar doesn't know that Iduna is Northuldra girl he saw seemingly flying on a gust of wind all those years ago. The day of the celebration turned disaster. The day Agnar lost his father, the king, the day Agnar himself almost died. What Agnar doesn't know is that Iduna is a true ally in the face of his royal responsibilities, the expectations of an overbearing council, and a well-meaning regent who will rule in Agnar's place until he returns 21 and assumes the Arendellian throne. As Iduna and Agnar grow ever closer, however, friendship is no longer enough. If only falling for each other didn't mean risking their futures. Iduna's as a hidden in plain sight citizen of Arendelle, and Agnar's as imminent king. But for a chance at true love, the risk might be worth taking. That's a lot of promotional language, for sure. And if you played a drinking game with every time they say Northuldra or Arendellian, you'd be drunk by the end of it. So again, that's the promotional language, Mary, but you tell me what Dangerous Secrets is about. What's the heart of this? What's the heart of this book for you in your mind?
Sure. I mean, I think it's an origin story. Obviously, we get hinted at in Frozen 2 the story behind Elsa and Anna's parents, Iduna and Agnar. And in Frozen 1, it's interesting because they don't discuss that at all. They're just barely in it, and then they die, and they're kind of just used as catalysts for the girls' adventures. And in Frozen 2, they start saying, wait, there's more to this story than you know. And I think in Frozen 1, everyone just kind of assumed they were these evil people who locked their child away, and they didn't really understand their motivations on why they did that. And I think that Disney giving a chance to go back and kind of explain what happened to both of them in their own life story and how they, you know, all the things that they went through, you know, when they were children, when they were Elsa and Anna's age, and kind of how it all led to what the happenings in Frozen 1 and Frozen 2. So I think one of the greatest things about this book is that we'll explain so much, and people were left wondering with questions. In fact, when I was writing the book, I would see these BuzzFeed articles or whatever and be like, here's all these questions we have left over from Frozen 2. How come this? How come that? And my editor sent some of them to me and be like, we should answer these. And I was like, all right, what a great responsibility. You know, sometimes you see a movie and you're just like, I don't know why that happens. I'm like, oh, I guess I'm supposed to figure that out. And so it was really fun. And, you know, luckily I worked with an amazing editor and the filmmakers. And so it was a group effort of, you know, building this story, building this backstory. And I think people are going to really love learning all this stuff. And I'm sorry if you can hear my text. I'm on this group text that will keep beeping and can't turn it off. So yeah, I think that this is going to be a great story for people to learn all that stuff. And then also have an emotional connection. We all have an emotional connection.
I think as opposed to just answering questions that people might have. And I think Mary was about to explore that a bit more, you know, having an emotional connection and also giving Iduna and Agnar like these real individual personalities. And I know I mentioned in my review, shameless plug here, please go and check out my review on Laughing Place, Dangerous Secrets. I know I mentioned in my review that we sort of hear about their sort of backstory, and it's like this sort of traditional love story with modern kind of features that keeps, you know, hopefully modern audiences engaged, as all authors try to achieve. But there's also, you know, things added. So, you know, you mentioned when reading the blurb, Steve, that Iduna's an inventor, and I just thought, like, wow, you know, like, where did that come from? You know, from my recollection sitting here today, thinking about Frozen and Frozen 2, I don't know that there was any suggestion that was part of Iduna's backstory, but that's something that, you know, Mary brings to the table and does it in such a way that, I guess the reader builds a relationship with these characters that they otherwise thought, you know, they're the parents and they sort of exit the story early, you know, by dying and that's that. Whereas this is, building on something, which I always love character driven stories. I think that keeps me really engaged, as opposed to like lots happening all the time, but we don't really know, you know, who the characters are and we can't sort of empathize with them. So I think Mary does a fabulous job of building all that up.
Thank you.
Jess brings up a couple of points there and a couple I wrote down actually that I wanted to bring up. So great. Mary, one of the things too that I really enjoyed was exactly what Jess said. Number one, there's a modern feel to it. And I think there's some gender swapping going on, which I really loved. And also, exactly bang on with Iduna. I really loved what you did with her character. And you're totally right. I love the inventor aspect. She's basically an engineer in this book, which I thought was fantastic. And similar to like Belle and stuff from Beauty and the Beast, certainly in a lot of the revisionist stories we've seen lately, you know, this damsel in distress trope is gone now, or should be gone anyways. Iduna's no dummy, right? She's, you know, even though she might be prone to trusting people too easily, like Johan turned out to be a bit of a snake, but, you know, this thing with her where she's incredibly strong, incredibly bright, incredibly independent. You know, what was the task you were given as far as characterizing Iduna in that way?
I mean, I think that she had to be strong and resourceful, and she had to have some agency to survive in the situation that she survived in, mm-hmm. you know, being away from everyone that she knew and loved. She couldn't just, and the filmmakers and my editor are really, really insistent that they didn't want her just to be like the prince's best friend and kind of hanging out, waiting for him to be out of whatever he's doing. Like, they wanted her to have her own life and her own agency outside of, you know, just being just their relationship. And so I thought that was great because, yeah, I wanted to create a three-dimensional character that readers could root for and not just, you know, a sappy love heroine who's waiting around for the prince. And I think one of the things I really tried to do too is give a little bit of Anna and Elsa in both of them. And so I think as readers read, as they have watched the film, they're going to see a lot of the two sisters in their parents and really be surprised by that. I think that Iduna is very much an Anna, and I think Agnar has a lot of Elsa. For better or for worse, in him, he had to go through a lot of the same repression that Elsa had to go through. So he really, you know, sometimes it looks like he's being mean and Frozen One because he's telling her to conceal, don't feel. But when you look back and you realize what he had to go through, and that, you know, in his kingly training, he had a lot of concealing, don't feeling, as royals do when they're trying to, you know, govern their people. And so he was given a lot of misinformation as a kid too. And so it kind of got passed on. But yeah, I mean, I think Iduna, I think people really fall in love with Iduna. I certainly did as I was writing her. She just becomes this person with so many hopes and fears and but her own dreams that are outside of just, you know, becoming queen someday. That's not even in her, you know, that's not something she even hopes or thinks about, you know, as a possibility. That's completely not going to happen. And so she has to have something outside of that.
Is that, Jess, is that something, I know you're like, you're a hardcore Disney, like, you know, or a real traditional Disney fan. Is that something you have really enjoyed seeing the last 2 years? Sort of like these revisionist takes on, you know, Disney princesses are not these, you know, feeble, you know.
You know. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like, I don't think anyone can, you know, fault this, you know, modern movement. And I know that, like, Kristen Bell was pretty outspoken about how she felt about, you know, portraying Anna and how she was a bit concerned about letting her kids watch, you know, the classics like Snow White and Sleeping Beauty with the issues that they raise. I am like a traditional Disney princess purist. Like, I just love those classics. I don't know if that's just the nostalgic fool in me or something, but you know, I think that's what I loved about Dangerous Secrets, is that there's so much you know, so much of Iduna being this, you know, strong, independent, resourceful woman, but at the same time there's these really awesome scenes, especially in the carriage between, like, you know, Iduna and Agnar, and they're just having these, like, playful discussions back and forth, and they're, you know, making jokes about, like, chocolate, which is great because, of course, that throws us back to Frozen and Anna and Elsa's love of chocolate, and, you know, those little hardcore fan things that we all latch on to, and we're like, ooh, we get it. We get where that came from. That's really exciting. So, you know, I really loved those as well, because I think, and this might be, you know, an unpopular or controversial opinion, but I think a lot of modern books try to push modern issues sometimes too much, or they try to do too much or include too much, and it just loses that kind of intimacy and that relationship development with their reader. And you know, that was just, you know, if I could say one thing about Dangerous Secrets, it would just be that I loved this fusion of traditional love story meets, you know, modern adventure. So it was just beautifully executed.
Mary, you have a daughter, yeah?
Yes, she's 9.
So you're writing, I mean, this is it. This is, you know, this is in your wheelhouse, or it should be, right? I mean, this is who you're writing for. I know this is a teen novel, but, you know, is this something that's on your mind when you're writing, you know, when did you start writing Dangerous Secrets, first of all?
They gave me the assignment in October of last year, so about a year ago. And it was interesting because it was before the movie came out.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah.
Why did they want to do a story about the parents? They're like in there for 2 seconds. I'm like, this isn't a great opportunity. And then for Frozen 2, and I'm like, oh, okay. Now this is going to be great.
Usually with IPs, there's an audition process. Was there one, or?
Not for this one. I had an audition for a Disney Snow White book that I didn't get a couple of years before that. But I think for this one, my editor just knew me. She knew I was a Frozen fan, and she knows a big Disney fan, and she had wanted to give me a book for a while because we worked on independent stuff like Dragon Ops and Camelot Code. Those were just Disney independent books. And so she knew me, and she knew that I could write quickly and that I love the source material. And so I think it was just a good match. And then she passed me on to the California editor that was working on that.
Write quickly. That sounds like a quick turnaround time.
It was so quick. So basically, we had about 2 months where we went over the outline because, you know, I had to create an outline. They had some notes and ideas, but I had to create the synopsis of the book. And then everything had to be approved by the filmmakers. And you know how Hollywood is. They're like, yeah, we love this. We love this. We love everything about it except nothing. And so, you know, we went through a few rounds. They were awesome. And I don't mean that in a bad way. But, you know, like, they knew what they wanted. And we found that spot. And then I started writing the book. But by that point, it was like, you know, the holidays. And, like, I had trip planned to Italy and like all this stuff was going on. And I was like writing, you know, 24/7, trying to get it done because it was due at the end of January. So it was the quickest turnaround probably I've ever done on a book. But it ended up being the best book and the easiest to write, I think, because the world was already created. It's not like writing your book from scratch where you're creating every world, every character. There was so much rich, you know, lore and history and source material to work with that once we had that outline done, I was just like zooming, writing the actual story.
And sort of to sort of jump back on Jess's point a little bit, you know, Mary, as a woman and a mother of a daughter, does this stuff occur to you? Sort of like do you feel a certain sense of responsibility when you're writing these types of stories? You know, and I agree 100% with Jess that sometimes it can be forced and feel like tokenism in a way, but I doubly agree that I didn't get a sense of that at all in Dangerous Secrets. Is that something you're mindful of?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's in the back of my mind all the time. I want to create characters, and not just for my daughter, but for the girls I see, you know, in my school visits, for the girls in my daughter's class, you know, like the dance studio. I want to create heroines that are worthy of them, with their own ideas and their own agency and their own agenda. That's definitely very important. At the same time, I don't think you could get away with not doing that in today's publishing world. I think that's also on the minds of the publishers and the editors and the whole teams. So I think that's definitely something. But, you know, at the same time, yeah, I'm not going in with agenda, an agency, a message to push. I don't like the letter, the lesson with a capital L, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. I'm very careful with all my books to, you know, present these themes, but I hate knocking people over the head with them. I think we can give kids are smart. They get it. You know, you don't have to go the extra mile to, you know, force it on them.
Well, that's the thing. We're getting to a point now where, like, you know, not everything should be a political statement. And I think as soon as you start writing with an agenda, then you've already lost the battle, I think. Right. So,
On that note, Steve, sorry to cut you off. Just while we're on the topic, I wanted to ask, Mary, what did your daughter think? Like, what sort of feedback did she give you when she read the book?
So she really loved it. We read it together. I read it to her, and she really loved it. She was a fact checker, though, I have to tell you. That was the point where she's like, that's not what happened. He didn't say that. And I'm like, wait, what? And this is near the end, right? And the book had already been finished. And my editor had read it, and the filmmakers had read it, and like no one caught that except the 9-year-old. And I loved it. So I'm like, wrote to my editor really quick. I'm like, we have this problem. And so we were able to get it, you know, fix it. But I thought that was so funny that all of us had missed this one little point and she was the one who got it. So, you know, I think I need to make her my fact checker on every book I write from now on.
Fact checker, I think she needs to get a cut of the royalties is what I think.
I know. She'd probably be happy if I just bought her like an Elsa doll or something. Yeah. Or sorry, Anna doll. She's obsessed with Anna.
Anna? Does she go back and forth or has it been Anna from the beginning?
No, when she was 3, when the first one came out, then she was Elsa, 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 let it go, all that. And now that she's older, she's all about Anna. She says that Elsa breaks the day and Anna saves the day.
Isn't that funny? Isn't that
she's very opinionated. In fact, she did this project for school where she basically said, you know, I had to say her hero, and she said Kristen Bell. And her goal in life is to meet Kristen Bell someday.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Wow. I'm having a flashback, Mary, to that gorgeous video you posted on social media a little while ago of your daughter singing, I think it was Let It Go. Wasn't she dressed up as Elsa?
Yeah, when she was really little, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know if you've seen it, Steve, but you've got to watch it.
I will watch it. Yeah.
From that, and then I also posted something she did recently, which was like a modern interpretistic dance of the next right thing.
Oh my gosh, that's so cute. I loved like the hand movements. Like she just nailed like the grace with which like Elsa uses her powers, and I just thought it was so cute.
I mean, that's it. That's what it's all about, right? I mean, it's easy. I'm a 44-year-old guy, and I love Frozen movies, but you know, it's great when you're able to see kids reacting to these things, because you know, apart from my stupid intro, like this thing is gigantic, right? Like it's huge. So talk about, Mary, you know, you're given this assignment, and you know, you're like, oh, we're giving you a Frozen book, and you're like, yay, and you're like, it's gonna be about the parents, and you're like, boo. And not only that, but because of the time period they want you to write it in, like we know the ending, right? We know what happens to these characters. So talk about, just as a writer, you know, and I'm sure they gave you a list of points and notes, but talk about just sort of putting, how do you piece together a story where you know the outcome already, and you have to figure out a way to make the book entertaining anyways?
Yeah. So one of the things that I figured out right from the beginning, and I wasn't sure they were going to let me do this, was to bookend the book with the sea voyage where they die. And I was like,
Which killed me, by the way. I cried. That's when I cried, was during those. That killed me.
Yeah, I can't even read like the last page out loud sobbing, and I like wrote the book. So I'm so sorry to everyone who reads it.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it was like, it just kind of, they were like, oh, you could kind of start it with like the day at the dam celebration and maybe end it where Elsa was born. And so I was like, well, I think a lot of people want to know what happened after Elsa was born. But what they wanted was a teen book. So they wanted the majority of the story to be when they're in teen years. They were very insistent on that, which is fine. And then, so we did a little bit of them as, you know, younger, like 12 and 14, when they first meet. But then we had to cut pretty quickly to when they're teens and they start falling in love. And that's really the meat of the book. And so I had to come up with enough, you know, material in that age range to really make it happen. And then they get, you know, then it goes older and they get married and they have the kids. And that again is like a shorter part of the book. I could have written a whole book from when Elsa was born to, you know, the sea voyage probably. But they wanted it to be about 70,000 word book, and it ended up being more like 80,000. So I got a little bit more out, than they had originally wanted, but yes, there's so many stories that I could have told. There's so many scenes that I could have included, but we had to be really careful to just, you know, put in the important ones. So I know there'll be some readers who are like, oh, why didn't you do a scene about that? Or why didn't you include a story about, you know, minor character this. And so we did, I squeezed as much in as I could possibly do, with the constraints that I had. But it kind of is good in a way, cause it will invite fan fiction. I think a lot of readers and a lot of Frozen fans love to write their own story set in the world. And now we got a whole new time period for them to write in, which will be exciting.
Right. One of the great things too, which I loved about this book, is that it's like unapologetically saccharine. which is great sometimes, right? I so as cynical as I am, that's like, you know, I need to melt my heart once in a while. So I'm just curious, I mean, besides just this story, which is just, you know, beautiful and romantic on its own right, are you a romantically inspired person in generally, or do you just sort of are you drawn towards fiction for that type of stuff?
No, I think I'm very earnest. I think that my best, you know, stories are really earnest, and I think that's important. I don't know. It's when I used to write romance, like actual adult romance novels, I had a hard time because I liked the more beta heroes. I didn't like the rough and tumble alphas who were mean to the heroine and yelling at them all the time, and then wanted to take them. You know, like that never. I did not feel comfortable writing that kind of hero. I especially for kids and teens, I worry sometimes, you know, with some books where the hero is just so mean and then like the heroine just falls into line and loves him unapologetically. And no matter what he does, she's still there because they have this unending love. And then in the end, she's going to change him and make him into the man that she always knew he was deep down. And I think there's kind of a danger to that. I'm not saying people can't separate fact and fiction, but at the same time, romanticizing that kind of thing has never been something I felt comfortable with. So this was a great chance to write a very earnest story. And I think Agnar is a lot like Kristoff. They're not the same personality-wise or anything, but, the, you know, Kristoff is another great example of a, you know, really awesome hero who just treats the heroine the way she should and is just really honest. And so, you know, not that I modeled him after that, but, you know, I like the parallel of the two of them.
Oh, there's that great, the great scene in Frozen 2 where she's running from the rock giants, Anna and Kristoff swoops in, picks her up, and he's just like, I'm here, what do you need? Just like, no questions asked, you know, what do you need? What can I do for you?
And he's so manly. It's not like he's some wimpy guy.
No, God, no.
So I think they did a great balance with that, and that's what I kind of tried to do the same.
I love the friends to lovers trope. That's my favorite. So I'm tired of enemies to lovers. And
yeah. Friends to lovers, and then they like, you know, like used to be together and then got separated.
Okay, yeah.
And I mean, I love the tension that you created too between Agnar and Iduna to marry. Like, you know, like you said, you don't want to have like the either party treating, you know, ill-treating the other, and then them sort of ending up happy together. That makes it a little bit problematic in terms of message sending, even though that's not what you're doing. You know, you're just trying to write the story and people draw what they will from it. But you know, there are some scenes where, you know, Agnar loses his cool and it's a little bit tense, but I mean, you know, c'est la vie, right? Like that's going to happen in life, and just because we kind of lose the plot every now and then doesn't make us a bad person, but it's definitely something that we work through, assuming that it's not, you know, some kind of dire situation. So there's definitely enough tension in there to pull it out of this. You know, we've been talking about how, you know, romantic and sort of traditional love story it is, but I mean, it isn't just all sappy and like, you know, I feel like that some people who aren't really into those stories might not, you know, might not be interested with us using those sort of descriptive terms. But I think there's definitely enough to play both sides and to carry it in a way that's real and not just, you know, happily ever after.
Yeah, I mean, and they have a lot of conflict, and they have a lot of things that are keeping them apart. Pretty much everything is.
Everything is, yeah.
And that was something that I really concentrated on when writing the book, is like, why didn't she tell him? You know, the filmmakers were very insistent of like, she tells him. You know, right before they get on the ship, basically, a couple of days before. And so the whole relationship, she does not tell him. And I had to constantly make sure it made sense that she didn't tell him, because you don't want the reader to be like, if she just told him, this would all be over, you know. Literally couldn't, for the fate of the kingdom, her own life, his kingship, like everything had to be at stake to keep the secret, or it wouldn't work.
Well, it would have been called No Secrets, not Dangerous. Yeah.
And I loved, I know Steve mentioned him earlier, but I loved Johan as well. Like, I wasn't sure where he was going in the story, you know, like I sort of wondered if he was, like, he created enough tension as it was with, like, Iduna and her work, but yeah, I didn't know if he was going to make...
Johan was an interesting one. He was a little harsher in the original version, and they had him toned down a little. But I still like how it all kind of came together and having that, you know, tension between them as well. And so, and the princess that, you know, Agnar is being set up with.
Oh,
well.
Don't steal my thunder, Mary. I was just about to. I loved Runa. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I love Runa and the side, it wasn't even the side story for a portion of the book, but the arranged marriage, you know, thing that was going on, right, with King Nicholas and trying to combine. And of course, he's the source of all the drama that's going on as well behind the scenes. But I liked the arranged marriage from first of all, I liked the way you broke your chapters up by points of view between the two characters. And I also like that we have an arranged marriage situation from the point of view of the man. Usually we get the point of view from the woman in an arranged marriage situation.
Right.
And this time it's from the man's point of view. It also turns out that Runa is just a really great person. Right. So, you know, at first you're not, you know, she seems a little sketchy, but it's almost like Agnar, his brightness almost kind of like transforms her, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it was important not to just make her an overall like witch and right. like the stereotypical like bitchy princess, you know, like that's it just gonna waltz in there. And I didn't want that because she's in the same situation as he is. Everyone is in the same situation where their parents are trying to, you know, politically manipulate everything using
them. She's a pawn in this game. Just, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and like, oh, that Agnar's mother also, you know, the parallel between Agnar's mother having to go through mm-hmm. this thing and him seeing, like, discovering the story of his mother and realizing that, you know, her life was ruined by the same thing that they're about to put him into and realizing he doesn't want that for himself.
This idea of conceal, don't feel, was that sort of something that you came up with the beginning, middle, or end of the process, or where did that come from?
I came up with it from the beginning because okay. I was feeling, I feel pretty good about that. I was like, the way I was able to work it in and the fact that he had to deal with conceal, don't feel his whole life, and then he passes it on to his daughter, suddenly makes it a lot more of a sympathetic thing. Like, you understand where he's coming from. This was drilled into his head from a very small boy, from his own father, and it's an unhealthy thing. And Iduna knows it's unhealthy, and she's trying to, you know, explain it to him, but it's really hard when this was all you grew up with. And in a sense, and when he was growing up, you know, this was what he had to do for his being a young king and, like, you know, keeping a kingdom under his control when everyone wanted to take it over, and to just go out there and act weak like a little boy who lost his dad. That wasn't going to work, and that wasn't going to save Arendelle. So he did what he thought he had to do. And with Elsa, he's doing the same thing. He's afraid that they will make her delegitimized as an heir, that they will, you know, make the kingdom right to take over if they find out about her powers and her magic. Arendelle still distrusts magic a lot. And so he thinks he's doing the right thing, saying conceal it, because it will help you as it helped me become queen someday. It's the only way, you know, you can become queen. And yet when you see it in the first film, you're like, oh, that's so awful with bad parenting. And so I wanted to try to use that to explain it.
I love that that was also like taken to another dimension, perhaps not as expressly, but even with Iduna and the fact that, you know, this underlying dangerous secret that she doesn't tell Agnar for the whole book, which I know, like you said, it, you know, it couldn't be like, oh, you just tell him and it's done with. But that was something that as a reader, I was like, oh my gosh, if she just told him, I would not feel this way. it would not be sitting with me for this long. But, you know, in a similar way, I think she was, you know, trying to conceal, not feel that emotion through her own experiences. And obviously with Agnar and Iduna combined, that's something that becomes key to Elsa and to Anna, and, you know, indirectly. So yeah, there was a lot of I'm not sure how your brainstorming process works, and I'd love to hear a little bit about that as well too, Mary, but I just felt like, oh, you know, if I could circle themes and then draw these little arrows, like, there would be lots of overlap, which makes it even more kind of engaging.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun to work with a property that's already exists because you can see a lot of themes through Frozen and Frozen 2, and then you can kind of play with those and expand on those, but also add in new layers or create themes that you didn't realize that were going through the first two movies, but now we see them, you know, come to part. And so that was really fun to do. And just even just dropping little, you know, things like the chocolate, you know, or just little things that you realize, if you are a big fan, you might see these little connections between them and what eventually gets passed on to their daughters. And that was part of, I would say, some of the most fun things to write were these little Easter egg type of things. Like the trolls especially were really fun to bring in there. That was my idea. To get them in with the trolls, because it was like they must know the trolls because they had this map in Frozen 1 where they went to them, so they must have had an encounter with them before. What would that look like if they went to see the trolls? And so that was really fun to play with.
That was a great moment too, when, you know, it's also a really fun way that this book connects to the larger Frozen world, right? And so that was your idea. So that was a fantastic way to do that. And a big part of this book is connectivity. So time is ticking away here, what was before, when you sat, you know, you get the phone call from your agent or email or however you did it, and they said, okay, you're getting this book. What was the number one thing that you wanted to accomplish?
I wanted to do justice for the fans. Being a fan myself, I know how important it is to respect fandom and respect what is important to them about the film. And I think sometimes even people who are working on things, you know, IPs and properties, don't understand always what the fans are looking for and what they really are yearning for more of. And so I really try to take that into consideration when I wrote the book, and not just to write. I could have written a standalone book that was about the parents, but didn't have too much connection to the Frozen world. You know, it was like such an independent story. Like, here's one adventure. I really wanted it to tie in to the films and everything that people already loved about Frozen. I wanted them to have the feels as they're reading it. And I wanted them to have those little sparks of, oh, I remember this, or this is has to do with what, and really just feel so connected to the characters, even though they weren't major characters in the film. I know a lot of fans want more Elsa and Anna, more Elsa and Anna, and I totally get it. They're hungry for a Frozen 3, for more mini adventures with them, all that. But I wanted them to have that same feeling when they read this book, that they were connected to the Frozen universe.
Well, I think you accomplished that goal and then some. Absolutely. Frozen 2 Dangerous Secrets comes out November 3rd. Listen, folks, the payoff is huge for this book. It's got a ton of characters, both familiar and new. Like Mary said, there's tons of beautiful little, you know, winks, nods, and Easter eggs. The aesthetics are bang on. The intrigue is great. There's a really great sort of drama side, you know, kicker to the story, which I won't talk about. It's too spoilery, but it's intriguing and great. And if you really want a good cry, watch Frozen 2 right after you read this book. I'm not saying I did that. I know somebody that did that. But it's fantastic. It comes out November 3rd. Before I let you go, I'm going to ask you both. I'm going to put you both on the spot. Frozen or Frozen 2?
Oh boy.
I'm hardcore. I'm in Frozen 2 camp.
Oh wow. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to just say Frozen, not to just play devil's advocate here, yeah. But the original always sits okay. with me.
I'm going to say Frozen 2.
I'll
probably get lots of that. But I mean, I that's just to say, I love Frozen 1. It's a classic.
Yeah, of course.
It came out at a great time when my daughter was 3, and you know, like we got to be Frozen fanatics on everything. But Frozen 2 is just such a deeper story, and I just really love how they expanded the world. And I hope they do a Frozen 3 someday.
Yes, me too.
Well, if money's any indication, this thing's a juggernaut. And but it is really great. If I had kids, they'd be Frozen fans. I have no doubt about it. Like all the other kids in the world seem to be. So
maybe Frozen 3 will be Dangerous Secrets.
You never know. That would be just a short on Disney Plus. Anything, I would love it. So hopefully the fans will really connect with the book and it will sell well. So that will inspire them.
Well, you made two side characters pretty damn important, as far as I'm concerned. So mm-hmm. Mary, thanks again. Please, please, please continue to be safe, and I hope you and your family make it out of the other side of this okay. Same goes for Jess down in Louisiana. Same goes for everybody out there. Please be safe, and we'll see you all again real soon. There you have it, another episode of Everything is Canon all wrapped up. A huge thanks to both Jess and Mary for joining us today. It was a lot of fun talking Frozen. Mary is super cool and does a ton of work for students and schools, so make sure you check out marymancusi.com to find out what she's got going on. Frozen 2 Dangerous Secrets comes out tomorrow, so make sure you pick up a copy wherever you buy your books. If you have a kid who loves Frozen, or you yourself love it, this book will not disappoint you in any way whatsoever. As always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you choose to listen, and head on over to cinelinks.com for the latest in movie, TV, books, and gaming news. Please be safe out there. Bye for now.